Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. In this podcast, we're going to talk about breathing, or how you can use breathing to unlock your true cardio potential. So as always, these Bike James podcasts are brought to you by BikeJames.com, where you can find a lot of great training information. That is the home of MTB Strength Training Systems. That is the world's first and foremost strength and conditioning company dedicated to the needs of mountain bikers. Back when I established this in 2005, there was no mountain bike strength training. So I pretty much had to figure out what is going to work for our sport. How do we use fitness to meet the unique demands of our amazing sport? And so that is what I've been doing for the last 15 plus years at that website. So that is a wealth of information that you can check out. Lots of free stuff that you can sign up for. And you can also sign up for the newsletter there, where you'll get a free workout and some the weekly newsletters. So make sure you check out BikeJames.com. And we're also brought to you by Pedaling Innovations. That is my company that makes the Catalyst pedal. And the Catalyst pedal is the world's only pedal that is based on real science and movement principles, not myths and half-truths about the pedal stroke. And so it looks at what does the science say, what is the movement principles that we want to apply to the bike say, and how do we do that? And so the Catalyst pedal allows you to give your foot the platform that it needs, the double pressure point, the pressure point at the ball of the foot and the heel, so that you have even forces going into the pedal. You don't have your foot collapsing. You're going to improve your power. You're going to improve your efficiency, the comfort. You know, one of the biggest pieces of feedback that we get from the pedal is how, you know, aches and pains and things that people have had forever go away once they get their feet on the right platform. And so you're going to have, you know, the power and efficiency of clipless pedals. You're going to have the fun and freedom of flats, and you're going to have, you know, comfort that no other pedal can provide. So make sure you check out pedalinginnovations.com, where you can learn more about the design and behind the Catalyst pedal and order a pair for yourself. And they do have a 30-day money-back guarantee. It is the only thing in the bike industry that has a 30-day money-back guarantee. So that's how much we believe in them. So all right, now that we've got that out of the way, let's get into the podcast. So we are going to be talking about breathing. Now, breathing is one of these things that we take for granted. You know, you breathe without thinking about it, but it is a very important thing. You can greatly impact your stress levels, your performance, all sorts of things simply through some breathing habits. And so being aware of these things can help you tap into this. And so, you know, really your cardio potential, your endurance potential is not going to be fully tapped doing just cardio training. All right. So when people think about cardio training, they're thinking about doing things that is going to make them breathe hard and sweat, and you're working hard. And, you know, because when you're riding a bike, you're breathing hard, and you're sweating, and you're working hard. So they seem similar. But there are things that you're not going to be able to effectively improve through just traditional cardio training using intervals and even, like, you know, base training and things like that. So what I want to do with this podcast is, you know, kind of share some of these other things with you. So this is a condensed version of a much longer workshop that I do. And so this is going to be like a 50,000 foot overview of some of these things. And I'll be diving into some of these things in more detail in future videos and podcasts and things like that. So, so just bear that in mind. But yeah, so diving into it. Better breathing. What are we going to get? Why do you want to, you know, even worry about better breathing, right? So improving your breathing is going to do three things for you. It's going to increase your performance, all right? So you will ride faster. You will ride longer. You will be able to, your cardio and endurance will improve simply by improving your breathing. Okay, so you can increase muscle oxygenation, you can improve movement efficiency, and you can reduce breathlessness during training and performing. So that's a huge one. Again, something that we don't really talk about a lot when it comes to cardio training is that there is a difference between running out of gas and getting breathless. Okay, so running out of gas and bonking, like that's what happens at the end of a, you know, long, hard ride where you just literally can't keep the pedals turning over. You just don't have the energy in your body anymore to continue to ride at a certain effort level. Okay, so that's running out of gas. getting breathless is different, right? So that's like you get to the top of a really hard technical climb and your heart's pounding and you're just like, I can't catch my breath, and you're breathing as hard as you can. But as soon as you catch your breath, you're fine, right? Like you can continue to ride hard and perform. So it wasn't a matter of running out of gas. It was a matter of becoming breathless. And these are two completely different things, and you have to train both of them. And so this breathless feeling is one of those things that's really hard to train through traditional cardio training methods. And so using some breath work and you know, workouts that, you know, kind of manipulate that will help round out your cardio training. So I'll be touching on that here in a minute. The second thing that it's going to do for you is going to give you better recovery. And this is huge, because remember, results come from training plus recovery. Okay, like if you train hard and you don't recover adequately from your training, then you're not going to see the results that you're looking for. And so you have to make sure that the recovery side of the equation is just as important to you as the training side. And so better recovery is, again, it's going to be a huge bonus for us as riders, right? So it's going to improve, better breathing will improve your sleep. It can decrease inflammation and improve your blood pH. All of these things will help your body recover from hard training and hard rides and just stress in general, okay? And so the last thing is a better mindset. And again, man, the mind controls everything. And so if you can't control your mindset and the thoughts that go through your head, then you're going to have a tough time performing at your top. And so breathing can help control stress. It can lead, better breathing can help control stress. It can lead to better focus and concentration. And it can also help reduce performance-related anxiety. So again, your breathing is a very powerful tool that you can use to leverage a lot of different things. So in fact, better breathing is the one lever that you can pull that's going to improve everything else. Okay, when you improve your breathing habits, you improve the things that go along with that, then you're going to see improvements in a lot of other different categories. And so this is that ultimate low-hanging fruit, the thing that you can address that's going to improve a bunch of different areas. So with that said, though, remember that optimal breathing, better breathing, it is transformational, but it isn't rocket science. Okay, we don't have to get too complicated with this. It's really a matter of being aware of some basic habits, some basic workout strategies that you can use, and then employing those things consciously, and that will lead to better breathing and the things that we're looking for. So one thing, though, before we get into what is better breathing, is some common breathing dysfunctions, because most people out there have one or more breathing dysfunctions. And so just like a movement dysfunction can hurt your riding, right? Like I think like a lot of people by this point understand how your movement efficiency on the bike impacts your ability to move and perform on the bike. So for example, if you can't do a hip hinge efficiently, right? Like you don't hinge at the hips and you bend over from the lower back, well, that's going to affect how you're able to move and perform on the bike. And so movement dysfunctions are a problem, but we also have breathing dysfunctions that are a problem as well. And the problem with them is that unlike movement dysfunctions, a lot of times they're not so obvious. And so you may think that you're doing fine when in fact you have one or more breathing dysfunctions. So going over a couple common ones, okay? So the first one is overbreathing. And overbreathing is defined as breathing more than your metabolic needs at the moment. And most people tend to overbreathe. Like when you're at rest, your breathing should be somewhere between 6 to 8 breaths per minute. I mean, really anything over 10 breaths per minute would be considered overbreathing at rest. And so if you're overbreathing at rest, well, odds are you're probably overbreathing while you're exercising and riding and stuff as well. And so this is inefficient, right? Like breathing more than you need to, you're working the breathing muscles harder than they need to be. It's just an inefficient use of the air and oxygen that you're taking in. But you're also having some effects on your blood gas and pH levels, which can negatively affect your performance. So overbreathing does affect these things, and like I said, these things do affect your performance. Another common breathing dysfunction is vertical breathing. So if you were to put your hand on your chest and as you are breathing, you notice your hand moving up and down. That's vertical breathing, and that is also known as chest breathing, and this is a breathing dysfunction as well. This is an indication that you're not using the diaphragm properly, and again, chest breathing and this vertical breathing can trigger the fight or flight response, kind of increase your stress levels, and so again, making sure that you're not using your chest to drive your breathing is important from an efficiency and also from a psychological standpoint as well, because these things do affect your stress levels and mindset. Okay, so usually the only time you're using vertical breathing or in the real world or the natural world, I don't know what it was designed for, is if you're like running, right? Like you are at maximum effort level, so you're being chased by a bear or something like that. All right, so it's a stressful situation that you find yourself in, and that's why you're breathing that way. Well, on the flip side, if you're breathing that way without a bear chasing you, your body doesn't really know the difference. All it knows is that you are breathing in a stressful way. You're using a breathing pattern that is usually only reserved for stressful emergency survival situations. And so it is going to, that's going to affect your stress levels. So again, like your sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems that kind of control your fight or flight or your rest and relax. Okay, and so you're looking for some balance between these two, but your breathing can tip that scale. It's like a teeter totter, right? So the more it's tilted to one side than the other, that's going to have a big effect on your mindset, your recovery abilities, your performance. And so your breathing is one of these things that can tip this teeter-totter one way or the other. And so using vertical breathing or chest breathing is going to tip it towards that fight or flight stress response, whereas using belly breathing and using your diaphragm will have the opposite effect and tip it towards the rest and relax and recover side of things. And so again, this is why chest breathing, you may think like, hey, I'm doing fine with it, but you are making things harder than you need to. Another common breathing dysfunction is sleep apnea. And apnea is a fancy word for holding your breath. And sleep apnea is where you stop breathing while you're sleeping. And this is not good. Like snoring is an early indicator of sleep apnea coming on. Okay, so snoring itself could be considered a breathing dysfunction. But if you're suffering from sleep apnea, this is has a lot of negative effects on you, right? So not only is it disturbing your sleep, which has a lot of implications for us as well, it's not healthy, right? Like there's a reason that they have these CPAP machines and things, because if you're not breathing while you're sleeping, it will it's just devastating on your body. Your body needs rest. And so sleep apnea and snoring are forms of breathing dysfunctions. So what do we do with this, right? So if you're listening to this, odds are there's probably one or more of these things that you have. You have one of these common breathing dysfunctions, either overbreathing, vertical breathing or chest breathing, or sleep apnea, snoring. So like I was saying, these dysfunctions are a little harder to spot, but once you know what they are and you start looking for them, then you can see, oh, there are some areas that I need to improve. And so this is why it's important. A lot of people, it's not just a matter of improving your already good breathing. It's a matter of actually fixing dysfunctions that are holding you back. So, just like the analogy of, having tight hip flexors and then trying to run is like trying to, drive a car with a parking brake on, right? Like just release the parking brake and you'll go faster. And it's the same thing with breathing. Like, yes, you can perform at a high level with bad breathing habits, but it's like trying to perform with the parking brake on. You have to work so much harder and there's so much more like stress on your body and system from doing it than if you were to just, release the parking brake, just improve your breathing and let your body work more efficiently. And so one of the things that will happen as you improve your breathing is you're going to develop a better relationship with CO2. So CO2 or carbon dioxide, it's usually looked at as a metabolic well, it is a metabolic byproduct of oxygen metabolism in the body, but it's usually looked at as just a waste product that you just need to get rid of, right? More oxygen, good, less CO2, better, is good. So, but that's not actually the case, right? You're like a lot of things, your body monitors your the metabolic byproducts of a process in order to tell it, you know, where it's at. So in this case, your body monitors CO2 levels to tell it when it needs to breathe. So if you've got, you know, high CO2 levels in your body, usually that's because you have lowered oxygen levels. Like there's a relationship between your oxygen saturation and your CO2 levels. And so as CO2 rises, typically oxygen levels are dropping. And so your body's not going to monitor oxygen levels. It's monitoring CO2 levels to tell it when it needs to breathe more. So it's actually CO2, rising CO2 levels that trigger this breathless feeling, I need to breathe. Like that's what, you know, one of the main culprits behind that is. So you also need CO2 to offload oxygen from red blood cells. It's known as the Bohr effect. So again, red blood cells take on oxygen and then they transport it to the working muscles, but it needs to offload that oxygen before your muscles can actually use it. And the main key to that is CO2. And so the more CO2 that you have in an area or in your body, it's actually easier to offload and use the oxygen in your blood. And so this is why chronically lowered levels of CO2 from overbreathing leads to reduced CO2 tolerance. Okay, so if you're overbreathing at rest, at work, you know, what's happening? Every time you breathe out, you're breathing out CO2. And so if you're breathing out more, if you're taking more breaths than you need to, it means that you are breathing out more CO2 than you need to. And so what this does is it lowers your body's natural levels of CO2. So what this means is that it takes less of a rise in those CO2 levels before your body starts to get that panicky, I need to breathe feeling. And so it's really a matter of developing a tolerance for higher levels of CO2 that is the key behind being able to perform harder and longer before triggering that breathless feeling. And again, remembering too that more CO2 you're able to tolerate, the easier it is for your muscles for your blood cells to offload oxygen and get them into the working muscles. So just, you know, overbreathing and breathing more than you need to is going to have a very negative impact on your performance. And so doing things that will help you improve your breathing efficiency so you're not breathing more than you need to, and also improving your CO2 tolerance so that you're able to tolerate higher levels of CO2 before triggering that breathless feeling, is one of the most important things that you can do to improve your performance on the bike. Okay, so that is really at the heart of what we're trying to do here, especially on the bike, is improve that CO2 tolerance. So some of the simple assessments that you can go through to see where your own breathing is at. I already mentioned breaths per minute. So anything over 8 to 10 breaths per minute would be considered over breathing. So just sit there at rest, you know, have a timer for a minute and just count how many breaths you take. So that's the first one. The next one is the BOLT score, the body oxygen level test. And so with this one, what you're going to do is you're going to actually hold your breath on an exhale. And holding your breath on an exhale is going to trigger a rise in CO2 faster than holding on an inhale. And so that's the reason that when we're doing CO2 work, tolerance work or testing it or whatever, we hold on the exhale because we're trying to trigger a rise in CO2 as quickly as possible. And so the BOLT score takes a look at your CO2 tolerance. And so what you do is you take a normal breath in and a normal breath out through your nose. And again, a normal breath out is like, because you have like a normal breath and then you've got like push everything out where you're like just all the air out. So generally a normal breath is emptying your lungs at about 80%, right? So you might have about, 20% of the air left in your lungs, but just a comfortable normal exhale. And then after you've exhaled, you're going to pinch your nose and you're going to count how long it takes, or, you know, time how long it takes until you feel the first definite urge to breathe. And so holding your nose, I used to, you know, I saw this and I thought it was silly, but it is a lot easier to sneak some air in and out through your nose than you think. So you do want to pinch your nose when doing the test. And what you're looking for is that first definite need to breathe. This is not a maximum hold. This is a submax hold. So if you get done with the breath hold and you start breathing really hard and heavy, or mouth breathing because you're trying to catch your breath, you held it too long. Okay, you're looking for just that first definite sign, that first, you know, strong urge to breathe, and then you breathe. And if you're doing it right, then you should be able to breathe through in and out through your nose and not have your breathing get out of control. You can keep it, you know, calm and relaxed. You may have to take like one or two kind of purposeful breaths through your nose to kind of, you know, at first, but beyond that, that means you went too hard. Okay, and so what you're looking for is, you know, around 30 seconds, give or take. You should be able to hold your breath on an exhale for about 30 seconds, and that would indicate a good level of CO2 tolerance. And so if you're a high-performing athlete, then you should be aiming for, you know, 40, 45 seconds or more. And so, again, there's ways to train this, which I'll talk about here in a minute. But that body oxygen level test will tell you a lot. And if you have a Bolt score of under 20, which mine, when I first started doing this, was about 16 seconds, then you're going to find that triggering that breathless feeling is a lot easier for you than it will be once you develop a higher CO2 tolerance. And so, I mean, I can tell you myself, like, that breathless feeling, I mean, that is one of the worst things, right? Like, it is... It's literally a little panicky feeling. You know, the little lizard brain is starting to take over. Like, I can't catch my breath. You need to breathe. Holy crap. Are we going to die? And like, that is one of the worst things. Like, when Vince Lombardi said that fatigue makes cowards of all men, I believe that's what he was talking about, was that breathless feeling. Because that breathless feeling, you will do things that you'll look back later and be like, man, why didn't I keep pushing harder? I was fine. I knew that I was, you know, afterwards you're looking on it, you're like, man, I was fine. Why did I stop? Why did I get to the top of that hard hill and then have to sit down and catch my breath for a second? Why couldn't I just get through that hill and just keep charging hard? And it's, you know, that breathless feeling is that reason. You can't override that breathless feeling. You have to, like I said, improve your relationship with CO2. And that's what's going to help you with that. And so, the Bolt score is an important way to assess that. And then finally, you can do a self-screen. I mean, an easy self-screen, like, you know, putting your hand on your just above your belly button and another hand on your chest and breathing and seeing, you know, where do you feel pressure? Which hand is moving? And if you're feeling the one on your belly, you know, moving out as you breathe in and moving in as you breathe out, and you're not feeling any movement from the chest, then that's good. That's where you want to be. If you're having trouble feeling your belly move and or you're feeling your chest moving, then that's not good. That's an indicator that you're not breathing efficiently. And so if you've passed that, another one that you can do is put your just, you know, a couple fingers right in your obliques, like just below your floating ribs. And then again, breathing in and out. And as you breathe in, you should feel your fingers being pushed out. And as you breathe out, the fingers should come in. And so it's this, this is what they call belly breathing. But basically, as your diaphragm, which is a dome-shaped muscle underneath your lungs, as you breathe in, it flattens out, and that creates the vacuum, which pulls air into the lungs. And then as you breathe out, it relaxes back into the dome shape. So as you're breathing in and it's pushing down on your guts and viscera and all that stuff. And so that's why you feel the belly pushing out as you're breathing in, if you're using the diaphragm. And then as you breathe out, the belly will collapse back in. Now, again, there is a difference, though. Like, one of the reasons that you want to test that, the obliques, the side breathing, is because you can just learn how to drive your breathing with your abs. Some people hear belly breathing and they take it too far, and they're not using their diaphragm, they're using their abs to drive their breathing. And so if you're using your diaphragm, then you should feel your belly and your obliques. Like, there should be a full 360 degree expansion as you're breathing in and out. And so, you know, or collapse as you breathe out. So if you're not feeling that, then that's an indicator that you're not really using your diaphragm properly. So what does all this mean, right? What do we do with this stuff? So better breathing has three elements, right? So one is biochemical. What is the impact on blood gases and pH levels? And again, like the more the higher the CO2 levels, this tends to create more of an acidic environment. The lower the CO2 levels, more of a base environment. You know, so your pH levels are impacted by your blood gases and other things that your breathing can have an effect on. The biomechanical, you know, what muscles are being used to breathe. And then finally, the stress response. What is the impact on stress and anxiety levels? So better breathing is going to incorporate all three of these things. You want to make sure that it's having the impact on blood gases you want, you're using the muscles that you want, and you're having the impact on your stress and anxiety levels that you want. And so based on this, better breathing consists of three things: nasal breathing, breathing with the diaphragm, and then matching your breathing to your effort level. So nasal breathing, this is one that I get asked about a lot. Like, what's the big deal about breathing through your nose? Is it really that important? And I used to be in this camp as well, because it was hard to breathe through my nose. I had all sorts of excuses. You know, I'd blasted my face into rocks. You know, I've had my nose smashed several times. And so, you know, I could definitely just fall back on the excuse of like, man, my nose has gotten screwed up and got scar tissue and all that stuff. But as I got into it more, and I realized that, man, that is, the nose is like anything else. If you don't use it, you're going to lose it. And if you force your body to adapt to using it, it will adapt to using it. And so, but why do you want to force yourself to do that? Why go through the effort? So in short, the breath of air that goes into your lungs through your nose is much different than the breath of air that comes in through your mouth. So first thing, when you breathe through your nose, you get nitric oxide into the bloodstream, NO2. And NO2 is a vasodilator, which means that it dilates the blood vessels and makes it easier for the blood to flow through them. So this nitric oxide only pools, well, as far as we know so far, it pools in the nasal cavity. And so you're only getting it as you breathe in through the nose. If you breathe in through the mouth, you're bypassing the nasal cavity, you're bypassing the NO2. You don't get that in the air. Nasal breathing also gives a chance for your nose to clean the air going into the lungs. So again, the little nose hairs and all the mucus in there is going to help filter out dust and, you know, all sorts of stuff, right? So if you breathe through the mouth, whatever's in the air is going directly into your lungs. And then finally, going through your nose, breathing through your nose, it will condition the air going into the lungs. So it'll give it a chance to match the temperature and humidity of your body, which means that your lungs will be able to, it won't be as traumatic of a shock on your lungs to have that air going in them, and they will be able to make better use of the air that's going into them. And so again, you breathe through the mouth, and that's whatever temperature and humidity is there, whether it's hot and dry or whatever, then that's what's going into your lungs. And this can have a negative impact on your lungs' ability to utilize that oxygen. So another side effect or thing that happens when you breathe out through your mouth, you are expelling it's like 43% more water, right? So this is why you can like fog up a mirror with your mouth, but it's a really hard thing to do with your nose. And so again, just always mouth breathing means that you're going to tend to dehydrate faster. And so being able to breathe through your nose is going to help with that. And, you know, again, we're not saying like breathing through your nose all the time. Like I'll get to it here when we get into the matching your breathing to your effort level. But there's breathing gears that you want to employ at different effort levels, and this will help you do that. But nasal breathing is super important. You've got to train yourself to do that. And so, just being aware of nasal breathing during the day, forcing yourself to try to nose breathe as much as possible when you're doing your workouts and stuff. Also, if you snore or breathe through your mouth at night, which if you wake up with a dry mouth, that's a very good indicator that you are breathing through your mouth. And so you need to fix that. So like mouth taping at night to help to clear that up or stop you from breathing through the mouth at night will make a big impact. And this is something that really helped me and helped my sleep quality as well, because you don't realize that mouth breathing, it makes it harder for you to have a quality night's sleep. And so another thing that can help is the neti pot. Again, something that I resisted for a while along with taping my mouth. It sounded horrible, but both of them were nowhere near as bad as I thought they were going to be, and they were made a huge impact on this. The neti pot is, you know, rinses out the sinuses. Usually you have some sort of salt and, you know, saline and baking soda type solution, which, you know, it helps open up the sinuses. And so you're, a lot of times we don't, you know, you can breathe through your nose a lot better than you think you can, especially when you start using the neti pot to help clean things out and you force your body to breathe through the nose by mouth taping at night. It will literally change. Like, my wife commented that the shape of my face changed, that my face got wider as my nasal cavity started to adjust to the nose breathing. So your body will adapt to the nose breathing if you let it. Okay, so nose breathing, super important. Next one is breathing with the diaphragm. So the diaphragm, again, that muscle that I talked about on the bottom of the lungs, this is supposed to be your primary breathing muscle. So when you breathe through the diaphragm, when you breathe through your diaphragm, it's going to draw air into the bottom of the lungs where there's more blood for gas exchange. The way your lungs are shaped like a triangle, okay? So they're wider at the bottom and narrower at the top. And so when you breathe with your diaphragm, you're drawing the air first into the bottom of the lungs, the biggest part of the triangle. And so that's where you're going to, you know, because of gravity, generally you have more blood towards the bottom of the lungs as well. So you have more surface area and more blood down there, which is going to improve the blood and gas exchange. The breathing with your diaphragm is also going to trigger a parasympathetic response, meaning that it's going to help trigger the more like the rest and relax and recover side of things, that teeter-totter that I mentioned earlier. You got one side that's the fight or flight, and the other side that's the rest and recover. Okay, the parasympathetic response, breathing through your diaphragm, is going to trigger more of that rest and relax, so help control anxiety and arousal levels. And then finally, breathing with your diaphragm is going to allow you to actually use your core muscles to brace instead of being used to breathe. And so the I'd mentioned earlier how some people actually learn how to breathe with their abs, right? Or they're using their chest. And if you're using these other areas to breathe, then you can't use them to brace and create movement. You know, breathing is your body's top priority. It will sacrifice everything else in order to breathe. I mean, you can only go a few minutes without breathing. You can go days without, you know, water and food and all these other things. So breathing is your body's primary, the most important thing that it focuses on. And so if you start to move, you start to ride your bike, but you use these other muscles to breathe, your body's going to continue to use them to breathe and try and figure out, well, how do we work around that? So it creates movement dysfunctions. Like, breathing dysfunctions can lead to movement dysfunctions. In fact, they're usually pretty related to each other. And so, in fact, one of the studies that I had come across during all this study was their conclusion was that until you normalize your breathing, you won't be able to normalize any movement pattern, that every movement pattern is going to be impacted by dysfunctional breathing. And so you need to, it's super important to make sure that you're breathing properly to make sure that you're able to move efficiently, which again is going to have a big impact on your performance. And so finally, last thing I'm going to touch on to wrap things up is matching your breathing to your effort level. And so doing this will help avoid overbreathing and blowing off too much CO2. It can help control anxiety and arousal levels. So again, if you're breathing faster and harder than you need to, then it's going to trigger more of a stress response. And, you know, and conversely, if you're trying to control your stress, if you're in a stressful situation, then making sure that you are keeping your breathing under control, that you're not starting to hyperventilate and breathe faster than you need to, will help, you know, control that as well. So, and also you can use your breathing to anticipate hard efforts and increase breathing before you need to. And so this is where the breathing gears comes in that I was mentioning earlier. And so just an easy way to think about this is you've got three gears. You got easy, moderate, and hard. Okay. Easy is an easy effort level, which means that you should be able to breathe in and out through your nose, nice and relaxed. Nose only breathing, nice and relaxed. That should be easy. Right, so you're moderate, where things are starting to get hard. Now, this is going to be in through the nose and out through the mouth, and it'll be a little bit quicker exhale, right? So whereas like easy might be, When you get to moderate, it's going to be a little sharper, a little faster. Okay? And then finally, you get to the third gear, your hardest gear. And this is where you're going to, you know, you can still do nose, mouth if you've trained yourself to do that. But this is where you can go mouth, mouth, and just full inhale. Right? Like this is that hard effort level that we're all very familiar with. Now, the problem is that a lot of us spend way too much time in that third gear when we don't need to. We're just third gear all the time, just mouth breathing as hard as we can, whether we're going easy or not. So matching your breathing to your effort level will help control that. But you can also use it in anticipation of hard effort. So something that has helped quite a few people that I've worked with when with the breathing, as you come to the hill, right? So you're cruising along, you're in like your, you know, easy gear or maybe your moderate gear, and you get to a hill and you're starting to go up the hill. Well, instead of going up the hill and waiting until things you have to breathe harder, start breathing harder in anticipation of the effort. Okay, so like as you start to get on the hill and you start to go up, shift to that next gear. If you're in the easy gear, shift to the moderate gear. If you're in the moderate gear, shift to the hard gear. If you're in the hard gear, maybe you need to get your breathing under control because you shouldn't have been in hard gear, right? So you're basically going to shift up to that next gear. And what this is going to do is it's going to you know, basically flood the body with oxygen and lower CO2 levels a little bit in anticipation of needing oxygen and having CO2 levels rise really rapidly. And so, you know, manipulating those blood gases to have a high oxygen, low CO2 environment as you get onto the hill is actually going to help you perform better. Okay. So like the analogy, the idea that I like to think of is, you know, like a train, you got an old, you know, steam powered locomotive. And, you know, if you got a big hill coming up, you're not going to wait till you're halfway up that hill to start shoveling more coal into the fire, right? Like you're going to start shoveling the coal in beforehand. Okay, and carry as much speed and momentum and everything as you can up the hill. And it's the same thing. Oxygen is that fuel that fuels our metabolic fire. And so if you start stoking that fire in anticipation of the harder effort, you're going to be able to perform harder and longer before things start to catch up. The metabolism starts to have trouble keeping up with the effort level. So that's the big, like I said, 50,000 foot overview of better breathing. Like why it's important, what it consists of, some simple ways that you can test and see where you're at with it. There was an article that I did a while back called "Is Holding Your Breath the Key to Improving Your Cardio?" So you can go and check that article out to get some examples of what like a CO2 tolerance workout would look like. But I'm gonna have another podcast here where I'll dive more specifically into workout stuff, like how do you use breathing during your workouts? What specific kind of workouts can you do to help improve your breathing and CO2 tolerance? How do you apply this stuff on your bike, which, you know, I've already talked to a little bit, some pre-competition routines that you can use to help get yourself ready and control anxiety level. So I'll dive more deeply into the specifics of that in a future podcast. But like I said, in the meantime, you can go check out that article on, is holding your breath the key to improving your cardio, to get more information and also to see a sample workout that you can start using to take advantage of this concept of trying to create a metabolic environment that, you know, triggers all these different changes in your body, one of which is a higher tolerance to CO2. So that's going to do it for this podcast. If you guys have any questions, as always, you can hit me up at james@bikejames.com. I'm always happy to help with pretty much anything that I can help out with, man. Just let me know. That's what I'm here for. And remember, check out bikejames.com where you can sign up for the newsletter, check out all sorts of free training info and videos there. And also check out pedalinginnovations.com where you can learn more about the Catalyst pedal. And so that's going to do it for today. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast, and I will talk to everybody next time.